Chariot Solutions TechCast number 24, part 2 with Dan Allen on SEAM. Hello and welcome to the TechCast. I'm Ken Rimple. Today, I wrap up my interview with Dan Allen, author of Manning SEAM in Action. Dan became a senior software engineer at Red Hat in late 2008. He's speaking about SEAM and security at the Philadelphia Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise Conference on March 27th. See phillyemergingtech.com for registration details. In part two of the interview, we talk about the JSR 299 spec, formerly known as WebBeans, the future of SEAM, workflows, and other user interfaces. The interview begins with us discussing WebBeans. And looking a bit at it, it certainly looks like a lot of the things that SEAM brings to the table, they're trying to address. So I guess they looked at SEAM, they looked at Spring, they looked at all these other systems and said, you know, why are they kicking my butt? So hopefully some of that stuff gets folded in. What do you see SEAM being in 2 years or whatever when Java EE6 is out and running and on containers?
Well, SEAM grew a tremendous amount, and its scope expanded, you know, and when I say that, what I mean by that is it extended into things that the spec, the Java EE spec, and the really the Java EE platform in general will probably never deal with, mm-hmm. because they're too specific, and I'll give you some examples. You know, doing email templates, doing PDF generation, doing Excel exports, doing some sort of JavaScript remoting, you know, maybe there's a place for that in Java EE, but, you know, some of these more specific problems that you have in the web, SEAM solves those problems for you. Report generation, you know, whatever it might be. Those solutions will likely always be there. That's something that SEAM can always offer because there are things that the expert groups would never agree on for reasons that some of it is tied to proprietary technologies or not even proprietary, but just technologies that that are owned by companies, whether they be open source or not. And they're not going to be something that we're all going to be able to standardize on. You know, we're not all going to agree how to generate a PDF. You use iText, this other person will use, you know, some sort of JPDF or, you know, some PDF generation library of the future. So those types of solutions SEAM will always keep offering. And we're going to call those, in SEAM 3, we're going to call those modules. Mm-hmm. You know, similar to how Spring has their modules.
Right.
The difference I see between SEAM's modules and Spring's modules is that SEAM modules are more about specific problem solving in web application development, not in software development. So for instance, I need to be able to send, I need to mail merge some in sort of an email template, right? So I need to be able to have some sort of email form template that I can just, you know, plug in a bunch of values and just send off tons of emails. Those are the types of things where it's very specific. It's like a faceless solution. You know, that's how the templates are done in SEAM. And, you know, it uses the faceless render API to actually render the thing outside of the normal JSF lifecycle. Those types of solutions, very specific, are the types of solutions that SEAM modules solves. It's not something along the lines of, you know, SEAM module is a new dependency injection framework, or SEAM module is a, you know, a new workflow engine. Instead, SEAM tries to find those technologies to integrate with and specifically solves that integration point.
Right.
So I'm sure that there's some, you know, there's some parallels in Spring, but the focus in SEAM is going to be along those lines, which is very specific solutions. And then all of the generic solutions, the software development solutions, it's Red Hat's sort of commitment to get those back into Java EE, because if their software development design development issues, then they should likely be in the platform if they're that high level, right? So that's really what the SEAM modules will have. Now, then there's sort of this these modules that teeter on design and implementation and application solutions, which is like the security module in SEAM. You know, because on the one hand, yeah, Java EE should have a nice security framework that's easy to use, something along the lines of an EJB3 or a JPA, super simple,
yeah.
and offer ACLs and everything else. But, you know, one that's going to be very difficult to arrive at, you know, maybe we see that in Java 7,
yeah.
maybe, who knows. So Seam can offer a solution like that today, similar to a CG in some regards, or Spring, you know, Spring Security,
yep.
but more specific in that it has integrations like rule-based security. And it has integrations where you can use your Seam components in, you know, in your security rule definitions, whether they be, you know, the ACLs or whether they be, you know, rule-based. So there are some modules like that that, you know, maybe they're not, maybe they're potential for a future spec, but for now they've got to sit inside of Seam, and Seam's got to continue to solve that problem.
Mm-hmm.
So. But those are what, that's really what Seam 3 is going to be, and it'll of course be the tooling and all of the, you know, the JBoss tools and anything that's needed for tooling and probably project generators. But the actual dependency injection framework, the contextual, you know, the at name annotation, the at in injection annotation, the things like that, that's really going to be replaced in Seam 3 by JSR 299. Which was formerly known as WebBeans, now called Java Context and Dependency Injection.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really nice thing, because what this means is that out of the box, Java EE 6 provides a dependency injection solution. And it's going to work across platform. Now originally WebBeans was going to be to integrate JSF and EJB. And the scope creeped from that. You know, and I use that term carefully here, and when I say that, I acknowledge the fact that the scope did come back into play. And what they realized was that the first thought was, you know what, let's integrate JSF EJB. Then they realized we have a much larger problem here, because Spring is still kicking everyone's butts, right? I mean, it's much better to use for injection. If you put Seam out of the picture and you just look at Java EE, you got to have Spring, because how else are you going to do dependency injection?
Right.
So the issue was, yeah, but not only that, nobody likes EJBs, so why don't we just create a new EJB model that's just based on POJOs,
yeah.
similar to Spring? Well, this was where the scope had gone, and it was like a second component model, and some of the expert group members were up in arms about this. And, you know, rightly so, because, you know, you're essentially competing within the platform with another component model framework, and not to mention the fact that JSF already has its own too. So then technically you have three of them. You have JSF, you have EJB, and then you have this new WebBeans. And what, through some negotiations, and I think it was best for everyone, even the people who thought originally that they just wanted to do away with EJB and just have something that was better, was that if you fixed EJB and you looked at the dependency injection solution as a set of services to help the existing Java EE technologies integrate with each other from a dependency injection perspective, then not only will you make everyone happy, because you won't feel like you're stepping on anyone's toes, you actually will be able to use all the technologies that are already there and leverage them. So now what JSR 299 is, it's really a set of services, which is really, to some degree, what we needed to solve anyway, which was getting the stuff to work together. And so now in EJB 3.1, you have the idea of a simple bean, and you have the idea of an enterprise bean.
Mm-hmm.
And a simple bean is a POJO. And a simple bean is annotated with the WebBeans annotation, and it's exactly like a Spring Bean or a Seam Java Bean component. It's just a basic old POJO, and I'm going to be able to access it from the container through the EL, for instance, or I can inject it into another resource. Now I can not only access it, but I can inject it into another Java Bean, because now the Java EE platform sees this bean as a component. And when I say component, I mean something that's injectable.
Right.
And now, not only are we able now to inject EJBs into arbitrary POJOs, which we now call simple beans, we can also inject simple beans into EJBs. So we now have the two-way integration of dependency injection that we've been looking for a long time. And so on top of that, if you just look at that benefit, it's huge. But on top of that, the way that dependency injection was solved in JSR 299 is probably the most innovative, revolutionary, you know, cutting edge from a design perspective approach to dependency injection that the world has ever seen. And I say that not because, you know, one person has an ego trip. I say that because lots of different people got together. This is really a proof of the expert group in the JSR. You know, it gets beat up a lot of times, but I think it definitely worked out in this case. A lot of people got together and they realized, you know, through the expertise of Gavin King and Bob Lee and, you know, all the other contributors, you know, Pete Muir and down the line, you know, all of the people who have involved in both the EJB3 specification and the WebBean specification, they put their heads together and they figured out the best way to do type-safe based dependency injection in Java. And not only did they make a nice dependency injection solution, they also proved that although this, you know, near more than a decade old language may look like it's shedding skin and starting to get old, they figured out a way to almost give a rebirth to this language through the use of these annotations. To do, and you see it mirrored in the Bean validation specification, to be able to use annotations to extend the type system of Java so that you can do more things in a type-safe manner. And it cuts out the casting, it cuts out sort of the ambiguity of doing name-based injections and, you know, runtime errors that should have been detected by the compiler, but the compiler simply can't detect it because of the way that the dependency injection framework was done. All that goes away. Now you have the ability to really leverage the type system in Java, and the way that that works is the annotations become essentially part of the type. So you no longer have date. You have like something like inauguration date, you know, or you actually are able to give a qualifier to your type, and the dependency injection in that case becomes quite elegant, and it becomes less hit or miss, less guesswork, less difficult for a new developer to understand. I mean, it's still obviously not, you know, super trivial stuff. It certainly takes a decent mind to understand how this stuff works. But a new developer, meaning new eyes to a project. If I came in and I knew how, you know, Java EE6, I was familiar with the platform, I would immediately be able to look at your application and figure out how all your dependency injection works. There would be no looking at some Spring XML configuration file and going, okay, where is everything being injected and when? And even scarier, like the auto-wiring that's in Spring, where it isn't even obvious that there's an injection happening. All of that has really, I think, been solved with a better solution. And I was not of this opinion originally. You know, this was after reading the specification many, many times and watching it mature that I really began to realize that we have something special here. And it probably, this is, if JPA was like the first cool specification that really existed in the platform that everyone was familiar with, there are other cool specifications, but the ones that we all talk about, there's no question that this one is even more impressive than what JPA was. So I think it sets to impress a lot of people. So but it's important to know that that's what, you know, WebBeans is. WebBeans is a set of services for Java EE6 that helps the existing components integrate with one another. And the very fact that they're introducing this concept of a simple WebBean, you have to give credit to the EJB specification to say the EJB specification is finally aware of the fact that there is such a thing as a non-enterprise Java bean. And it should get just as much merit in the spec as an enterprise Java bean, where an enterprise Java bean would be one that does persistence and transactions and, you know, any other services that EJB provides.
That sounds very powerful. It sounds like I have to start reading the spec.
Yeah, it's really an easy read, and I really, for anyone listening, I absolutely recommend reading the WebBean spec. You'll really get excited about Java again, I think, and you're gonna look forward to the applications that you develop under it. I mean, that was sort of my take. I mean, that's how I felt. You know, that was my feeling as I went into reading it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. We don't have a whole lot more time, but Can you maybe do a drive-by of the other services, like maybe potentially business rules and workflow or something along those lines, and just mention what they are in Seam?
Yeah, well, I'll answer two questions. The first one I do want to address before we run out of time is, you know, what other UI platforms can you use with Seam?
Right.
You know, there's been news about Wicked and GWT, and, you know, keep in mind that, you know, as we move forward, so WebBeans is, as I just described, which is really Java context and dependency injection, is not a UI framework.
Right.
So that will be essentially, it'll replace Seam's core in Seam 3. You know, you'll use all of the WebBeans annotations. What you have as alternate platforms in Seam is Wicked. And Wicked is nice, is a nice integration because Wicked is so similar to JSF in that it's a, you know, it's a component-oriented UI framework, and it has pretty much the same mantra as JSF, although it's all done in Java, and arguably it's you know, less complicated than JSF for some people. Some people, they think it's more complicated. Depends on how you look at it. But because they're very similar, you can expect a similar quality of integration. There wasn't a whole lot to do to get Wicked to work, and you can almost expect similar things. You obviously lose some of the benefits, like Seam doesn't offer problems for shortcomings in Wicked. Like, it doesn't solve the types of problems that Seam was solving for JSF, like, you know, give me a way to do a easy email template or something like that. You know, those are problems that are specific to JSF. Those are the server-side UI component frameworks. For the client side, or what some people call the three-tier frameworks, would be ones where you have to essentially have the application running on a client. It's a thin client, if you will. It's like a thick client, but running in the browser. So it's sort of RIA, rich internet application. Those would be Flex, GWT, and just pure JavaScript. I mean, you could use in Seam, you could, as a UI layer, you could use Dojo and just use Seam components through Seam JavaScript remoting. So never rule that out. GWT support is okay. It's really going to look more like, hey, I'm on GWT and I need to invoke a back-end web service. So it's almost like a relationship that's like a web service relationship between GWT and Seam in that case, where Seam would be the provider of the service. The Flex integration goes much, much deeper because the people who have been working on it have taken it much deeper. Definitely look at Granite DS. They're a company that does rich internet application framework, which is based largely on Seam. They do a whole marshalling framework, so your objects, your entities can come across the wire into Flex. Flex can modify them. They can go back across the wire again, and JPA can do the automatic dirty flushing and all of that. So it's almost as if you're running on the server, but you're not. All of that marshalling is being handled for you by Granite DS. And the other framework to look at is Flamingo, which is another Flex Seam integration. And it has a similar approach than Granite DS, although I'll tell you, a lot of the Seam developers like the Granite DS solution a lot better. So if you're in Flex and you're doing Seam, Granite DS is a must look at. You know, you definitely got to check that out. And, you know, we may see alternate UI options in the future, though likely when you look at one UI framework to the next, you actually see that, you know, it's not like, for instance, there's a Tapestry integration that's not sanctioned really by the Seam project. But, you know, you really, unless you're a Tapestry fanatic, you really can get the same mileage out of JSF or Wicked. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to step outside and try to do something like Tapestry when you already have JSF working so nicely with Seam. And, you know, I want to mention real quick about Ajax. You know, Seam doesn't really address the Ajax issue because it really isn't a Seam issue. It does offer Seam remoting, which is similar to what DWR is, just basically a way to get a reference to a back-end Seam component from JavaScript and call methods on it. Of course, everything has to be asynchronous because Ajax is asynchronous, so everything is call a method and run a callback method. You know, call a method, wait, run a callback method. So if you're in that mentality, if you can think that way, and you like to do Dojo or whatever, then you may just like using Seam with JavaScript remoting, you know, without anything else in between. You could always go with that approach. But really where Seam gets its benefit from Ajax is it just lets, you know, JSF do the Ajax thing. So you have Rich Faces, Ice Faces, Trinidad, you know, basically whatever the JSF component is capable of doing, Seam doesn't really see a difference, right? Because as far as Seam's concerned, it's just the JSF lifecycle is being executed. And those Ajax frameworks for JSF honor the JSF lifecycle. So every Seam component you had today just keeps working the way it does. The only difference is it just doesn't have a navigation event that occurs after it gets invoked. It just has a partial page update, right? I mean, that's the whole idea of the Ajax in JSF. And then, of course, all of this is going to be in JSF 2, which is going to be very exciting because finally you don't have to go grab Ajax for JSF or Rich Faces or something to get that partial page rendering. Finally, you get that solution natively in JSF, and the whole behaviors API is very fascinating, which coming down. So then, you know, I want to briefly talk about workflow. So again, Seam doesn't try to introduce new technologies like a workflow. It tries to reuse existing ones. So Seam's workflow is based on JBPM. There's actually two flows, if you will, in Seam. You have page flows, which would be single user, you know, wizard type things, you know, go through your shopping cart or do a pre-flight check-in or, you know, search for travel and then, you know, drill down. That's powered by the JBPM infrastructure in terms of they reuse the state machine, but it's a custom language, it's a custom DSL to describe, you know, the page transitions. But that's just for single page flow, and essentially it's just conversations that are locked in and the order of pages that you're allowed to execute, as opposed to ad hoc conversations, which just means, you know, the user can sort of navigate wherever wherever he or she wants to navigate, and the conversation is kept open as long as the token is propagated. So the other solution is the multi-user flows, multi-user processes, which are the true integration with JBPM. And really, Seam isn't doing all that much here in changing how JBPM works. All it's doing is saying, if you were to download JBPM today, and this is sort of the argument that I always make, if you download it today, how would you start using it? Right? How do you do Hello World? Right? How do you do, I want to start my first process and just transition from start to finish and say your workflow is done? Well, there's the problem of, well, how do you bootstrap it? You know, how do you add variables to it, and how does it get access to, like, your, you know, components, your EJBs or your Spring Beans or your Seam components? How does the business process access those? All of those questions are really unanswered, and if you don't have Seam, enter Seam. Seam automatically bootstraps the JBPM runtime, and it integrates the variable context to the point where you can just say, hey, I have a variable in my business process. I want to inject that into my Seam component, and Seam automatically knows how to do that. Or you could say, when I click this button and I execute that method in JSF, I want to put an annotation on that method that says, start this business process. So, you know, through a declarative approach, you can manipulate the transitions, the creating and destroying, if you will, of the business processes. So it just gives you a way to, one, bootstrap BPM, two, manipulate the transitions, and three, contribute and pass back and forth variables. So it's like, I want this variable, like the order ID. I'd like this order ID to be stored in the business process. So you just, in Seam, you just say, store this in the business process, and whatever business process is currently active at the time, Seam knows where to go store that variable. And then the business process maybe goes off to another user, and when that user views their task list and brings it up, then boom, that order ID can be injected into the Seam component, maybe to display the order. So you have that two-way passing of variables. So what Seam is really doing is improving the accessibility of JBPM, allowing you to try workflow for the first time, perhaps, in your application. As you get more advanced, you may start finding less interest in this integration because you're already become a workflow expert and you have your own way of doing all of this setup. And it's much more complicated. You want to do distributable, you know, setups. Then you've I like to say you've graduated from Seam's integration in JBPM, and now you're ready to do workflow on your own. But for people who have never done workflow, it's a great place to start to try to use it. And really, that's the key of Seam to sort of wrap up things. That's the key to Seam from top to bottom. Seam is really about accessibility. It's about saying, you know what? I want to try this technology, and I'm afraid to try it. I'm afraid because it's going to take me a lot of time. I'm afraid because I'm going to fail. I'm afraid because I'm not going to understand. And so what Seam does is if you flip through the reference documentation of Seam, chapter after chapter, there are new technologies that you can try. And, you know, this is a similar offering that Spring, you know, boasts oftentimes using, you know, their like JMS template or Hibernate template. Mm-hmm. The difference, the important difference, especially for a newcomer, is that more times than not in the integrations, you're getting a chance to interact with the API directly. So Seam glues, but it doesn't hide. Mm-hmm. Right? So you can inject an entity manager. You don't use, you know, Hibernate template or JPA template. You use entity manager. But the way it got to you, the way it got to your component is handled for you nicely. The glue code is taken care of. It's set up for you properly and torn down for you properly. But it doesn't mean that you're treated as a novice, such as you shouldn't be touching it. You can touch the APIs. You can touch the JBPM, for instance. You can touch those APIs. But injecting the JBPM context is not something you have to worry about how that happens. So it's great for a person who's trying to learn but doesn't have a lot of time to try to learn the bootstrap process, to learn the configuration process of these different technologies. So that's really the value that I see in Seam and will continue to be the value, is improving the accessibility of the Java EE platform and the ecosystem of, you know, enterprise Java libraries in general, the ones that Seam touches on.
Excellent. I have one more question for you before we wrap up.
Sure.
So let's say you were out drinking with Seam in a bar, and Grails comes on over and breaks a glass. Who's going to win? We were actually talking to some people tonight, actually two of my developers that I work with, about Grails, because that's one of our interests as well.
Yes.
And just what you said kind of strikes a chord there, is that with Seam exposing the APIs and letting you use them, but setting up all the cruft around them, and making it easier to access an existing API. You know, I look at Grails and what it brings, and it certainly has its pluses. But they do have their own API around everything. They have their own Groovy-based access, and they hide Hibernate and they hide Spring MVC. You know, it just seems to me that you're right. There are two totally different approaches. And I guess you have to decide for yourself which one makes more sense for your organization.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the questions that often comes up is, you know, is Spring better, Seam better, is Grails better? You know, my opinion has been forming that I really like the Java platform in general. I mean, there's just so many cool things that are happening in the Java platform. And leaving the Java platform is a big, you lose a lot of your reusable knowledge by doing that. So the more we can pull in, you know, not to say we're hoarding all the technology in the world, the more we can pull into the Java platform, the better we are all going to be, because we can move from Grails to Spring to Seam and still not have to give up JBoss,
right,
and our knowledge of how to configure it and all of that stuff. So, you know, if you're a person who's really into Groovy and you want to try, you know, some of the Grails stuff, you know, I don't say don't try Grails. You know, I say, you know, you should try Grails. You're going to know in the end when you want to use one technology over the other. I like Seam right now for learning the native APIs. It's really for that. It's great if you're using Java EE only purely, you know, maybe you're in a shop that, you know, Groovy is a no-no and you have to use Java EE and you have to use JSF, then you should definitely throw Seam in there, because using JSF without Seam is just painful.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to know when you need to use it. That said, you know, what I hope is, you know, integrations like the Spring Seam integration or even Grails Seam integration or whatever, you know, that they grow, because it's neat to be able to try multiple technologies at the same time. It probably more for advanced users, like, you know, as you've used each of the technologies, you know what you like in Seam and you know what you like in Spring, and you'd like to use that one feature of Spring while you're using Seam, pull it together. I wouldn't go out there and pitch it to say, you know, you should use all three at the same time. But if you're an advanced user, you're going to know. You're going to go, you know what, this use case right here, this would be really good if I could take advantage of that thing in Spring, because, why reinvent that one? Or, you know, you may find that, you know, one application over another, just the integration suits you better. So learn all the technologies and use them as appropriate, but never stop playing with one or the other. I mean, that's the key, because as soon as you do, you really do silo yourself. And I have to remind myself that all the time, you know, and you probably struggle with that as well. With all these technologies coming, you really want to try them all, but you don't have a lot of time to.
Right.
But at least now with the frameworks the way they are, it's becoming easier and easier to get a lot done in one day to learn about it, like Grails is. Yeah. So, you know, I don't go there and, you know, hammer on all the other technologies and tell you what to use. what I tell you is that, you know, these are the things you're going to learn if you give Seam a try, and I think it's worth doing regardless of what technology you use.
Completely agree. Completely agree. You're speaking at the Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise conference at the end of the month. So any listeners who haven't registered already should definitely get on over to phillyemergingtech.com and come see Dan Allen. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You bet. Yeah, I'm going to be talking about security, the Seam security at that conference. And I think there's a lot of cool stuff happening there. So definitely come and check it out. And I was at the conference last year, and it was just a tremendous conference and such a great value. So you definitely need to go and get out there.
Great. Dan, thanks a lot. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Thanks again to Dan for coming on the show. You can follow him on Twitter. His username is Mojave Linux. That's Mojave Linux. You can also find Dan's blog at www.mojavelinux.com. His book, Seam in Action, is published by Manning at www.manning.com. He'll be speaking about Seam security at the Philadelphia Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise Conference on March 27th, so come to the show and say hello. Register online at www.phillyemergingtech.com. For podcast feedback, email techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com. You can follow us on Twitter as TechCast. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.